Hello, hello. Welcome everybody to JavaScript Jam. We're going to be talking NextConf today, and we got Dev with us to give a little bit of his perspective as someone who was there at the conf. We'll go ahead and bring him up. How's everyone doing out there? Hello, Rishi. Thanks for joining. Go ahead and throw you an invite also. Yeah. All right. I just tweeted recently about the SBF trial. I don't know if anyone is following that. It's not looking good for Sam, let me tell you. What's up, Dev?
How's it going? How's my audio?
Audio sounds good.
My setup has been a little jank because I lost the wire that I used to connect my mic. So
Oh,
now I'm
really?
just using my headphones.
Okay, yeah,
But
no, it sounds pretty good, yeah.
cool. It's great to hear.
Yeah. So, were you at NextConf in person in SF?
Yes.
Okay, first
So, but I
question,
sub.
have
Yeah,
you
go
been to
ahead.
SF before?
I have been to SF before. I
Okay,
was at
cool.
Jamstack Conf
Oh yeah, that's right.
and Reactathon.
Okay, what were you gonna say?
No, go ahead. Nothing.
That was just what I was curious about because I grew up and lived in the Bay Area for a very long time, so I was
Nice.
curious for outsiders' perspectives on SF because it used to be nicer, let me put it
Yeah, that's what I've heard. But I think
that
other than pretty much other than Cincinnati, I think SF has been the only other city in the States that I've been to, like that I've been to the most.
Yeah.
As in, like, I've been there 4 times and I've lived in Cincinnati for 4 or 5 years.
Sure, yeah. Well, I anticipate you traveling a lot more in the future with the line of work you do.
I mean, like, yeah, I kind of already am. Like, I didn't notice when it happened. But I very quickly transitioned from like just being a college student to I'm traveling every other month, like or multiple times a month. And I didn't quite notice that transition happening, but now that like four or 5 months have passed, I can see it very clearly.
Yeah, I think traveling every other month, that's actually a pretty good cadence. I've been in a situation where I'll have like a month where I'll do like 3 trips at once, and I would not recommend that.
No, yeah, it is every other month, but every other month it's like 3 trips.
Yeah, no, that sounds like the
Exactly,
worst of
yeah. I mean, it could be the worst of both worlds, or it could be like a nice in between, or like there's a traveling month and there's like a working month. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
But
They don't have
I
to work
also.
when you travel.
I mean, yeah, kind of, but then I also like went to India for a whole month, and that kind of was the worst of both worlds because I was also like there's large travel involved, but then also like I didn't quite get to work because I was in India and with family and across a different time zone.
Yeah, that's tough. I'm sure Clerk has generous PTO though, right?
I mean, I got a little bit of it, but mostly like I was trying to work. Like I wasn't on PTO. I did take PTOs to go on like family vacations and to React India. But like I was trying to still like keep working
This
a little bit.
is the biggest mistake new people, and I made this mistake too, where it's like you're like, man, like I really want to, like they need me. I need to keep working, right? And it's like, no,
Yeah.
like when you're like take your time off. If you're gonna be traveling, just take the time off. It's better for them for you to do that than to like
But
work
like I can't do
half-assed.
one entire month, right?
I mean, if you have a kid, you can take a month off. You're just visiting family. It's a little harder to
Yeah, but
justify
I
a whole
am a
month.
kid.
That's funny. Cool. Let's talk about NextConf. So, you were
Right, yeah.
there. Yeah, tell me about, your initial thoughts or just kind of like high level take, and then we can kind of dive into specifics.
Yeah, I mean, last year I wasn't at Next Year's Con, but that's kind of the like I was getting into the con like go starting to attend more conferences at that point. I was really interested in next year's conf, and I was like in San Francisco when it was happening, attending a different conference. So like I definitely wanted to like be able to make it this year and like see what it's about, see what all the buzz is. And I really don't think it was like I think it kind of kept up to the hype that was like at least built in my mind about like what exactly happens at this conference, who's there at this conference, like who's talking about what. And if anything, there's probably a lot more of that going on that I just completely missed because of like I don't like I'm still not the greatest at scoping out conferences yet. But yeah, I think like overall I went into it kind of thinking that yeah, it's this is where like all the like the latest and greatest in web development world happens, like the stuff that people are talking about in Next.js and Vercel land are things like basically no one else is doing, and this kind of really like almost hit that home, that the kind of like things like partial preview and like suspense rendering. Yeah, some a lot of frameworks have suspense rendering, but really the way that Next.js combines them makes it a seamless experience. And on top of that, like with the partial pre-rendering stuff, like it just like it's another layer of abstraction that we don't think about, and it's a new capability that hasn't really been achievable before. Those are the kind of announcements that I think I was kind of expecting at Next.js Conf, and they did happen. So that was great to see.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I would love to dig into partial pre-rendering since that was the first thing you mentioned. I have not heard this term. How is it different from partial hydration?
So, and it's a great question, and I think this is the partial pre-rendering was also kind of the like topic of the day as to speak, out of all the releases, because the other releases were like, yeah, this thing that we announced before it's stable now, and this other thing that we announced before it's we are still working on it, and here's a course. So those were the other three big announcements, and then the partial pre-rendering is like kind of technically like it's the most interesting one. The basic premise of partial pre-rendering is that Next.js and Vercel have been trying to push us to edge runtimes like Cloudflare Workers and basically do our compute as close as to the user as we can so that they can receive quick responses, right? Basically, we don't want them to be waiting for a round trip from wherever they are to US East 1 or to Iowa or something like that. And that was kind of like the motivation behind let's push this compute to the edge. But like there's a big barrier there of edge runtimes and making sure everything is polyfilled and making sure like your code can still work on these different runtimes. And partial pre-rendering is kind of a it's an approach to be able to receive or get some of those quick response times that we have on the edge, but without having to like deal with the various edge runtimes. So this is kind of the context behind it. So what it actually does, partial pre-rendering, is it'll look at your page, it will render them statically until it hits the first suspense boundary, and then it won't go any deeper. Then it'll like basically go down instead of going deeper. So it'll generate a static shell of your entire page that just stops at the first suspense boundary, and then that is sent as like a static HTML file. And is stored on the CDN. So it's basically a combination of static generation and dynamic rendering. So you get the shell that's statically generated, it's on the CDN. So you get that response immediately. And then everything else, because now we have streaming, all the dynamic data like are dynamically rendered, like server components or server-side rendered stuff, it can be streamed in later. So basically, like,
Okay. I'm
yeah.
struggling with this because this to me is server components. So is this enabled by server components? Is this like the next feature that server components is built under? Does this have nothing to do with server components? Like how does that all fit together?
Yeah, so server components are like kind of the key feature that enable this, especially with suspense. So basically, you know, the transition that we did from like render everything once and send the entire HTML to, okay, now we have streaming. So we have these suspense boundaries in Next.js app router, and whenever there's a suspense boundary, your server components will just get rendered, and the output will be sent to the client. And then this, everything that was inside the suspense boundary, that will render in concurrently, and then like their responses will also be streamed in later once the data fetching is done. Was that kind of an accurate
I guess
explanation of
the reason
suspense?
why I'm struggling with it is, I guess I feel like Next has been guilty of this in the past, of inventing new terms when it's like, do we need this new term? It's like, to me, they could have just said server components works now. You can use server components, and like, they've already explained the benefits of that. So it's like, why did we need this new term, I guess is my question.
So the idea is that, again, this is like a new capability that wasn't there before. Like right now, you could either statically render the entire page and put it on the CDN, or the entire page gets rendered by a Lambda or a worker. So there's no, like, you cannot combine or mix and match the two of them. So partial pre-rendering basically gives you the ability to do both in the same page. And the boundary between them is the suspense boundary. So they just work in the sense of there's nothing new you have to learn, there's nothing new you have to write, because the existing boundary, this existing thing that is the suspense boundary that we have been using, it just reuses, or this new functionality just reuses that same concept that we've already had. So in that sense, like, it's not something new that we have to learn, like, to put in our code, but it's a new capability that we can now kind of like keep in mind and enable for our application, and maybe at some point it just becomes the default.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm going to read just a little bit from the blog post
For
on
sure, yeah.
partial pre-rendering here. It says, we'd like to share a preview of partial pre-rendering, a compiler optimization for dynamic content with a fast initial static response. It builds on decades of research and development into SSR, SSG, and incremental static revalidation, ISR. So, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. It's like, how do we take all these different weird rendering modes we have and try to slot them into like a single most optimized setup, which I think is great. I think making developers think about all these different rendering modes is hopefully going to be like a thing of the moment, and we can kind of move beyond. I think you're seeing so much work on this over the last 2 years in projects like Astro, and now that we're bringing it to the React frameworks, this is going to be really great. It says here that it's a preview, though. It's under active development, so this is not prod ready, it sounds like.
Yeah, so it's like actions or turbo pack, like you have to enable, although actions are now stable. But yes, partial pre-rendering, you have to enable it from your in your Next.js config. And because this kind of a preview, we are now like, there will now be a period of how does this work with existing applications, and more importantly, existing libraries. So for example, what does this mean for auth? Can you have pages that sit behind an auth layer, but can they still be like this partial pre-rendered if you're accessing cookies within it? Now, the example that they gave is very specifically like, yes, you can access your like cookies and stuff inside the suspense boundary and still have the outer shell kind of have a static rendered version of that. But then again, how does this work with libraries that already do this? How does this play into these other structures? So I think mostly the preview period is going to be less about is it ready to go out in production, and more about how much stuff is it going to break if it goes out into production, right?
And I'm sure you working at an auth company, this is something that everyone's talking about and trying to figure out. So where's the Clark team at with this?
Yeah, so we have been really early on to adopt like new Next.js features and offer them as soon as we can. Like as soon as server components were now announced stable, we had a new package, we had a new Next.js integration, or it wasn't a new integration, it was just like additions to the existing integration, where we now exported server components that can just read your cookies and headers as Next.js exposes them and build that entire auth tree, like nauth components on the server, instead of like relying on dynamic data fetching at all. I mean, it still relies on dynamic data fetching. It's just the way that server components offer it instead of regular components. Same thing with Edge. And I think with this one, we are, like I pointed out before, it's the matter of like the way we currently set up the middleware, the cloud provider, and we request for auth data. How does it work right now? How do we make sure that if someone only grabs for the user ID or calls the auth or current user functions in the server components, how do we make sure that it doesn't opt out the entire page out of like static shell or static rendering? Because if it does that, then partial pre-rendering will just look at it and ignore that page because there's no suspense boundary there. So again, there's no new APIs for this, which is something they emphasized quite heavily in the announcement that,
This
hey, we
doesn't
really think
break
it's going to be
anything, we promise.
exactly. Yeah, they hit really hard on that, like no new APIs, to the point that I was looking at whatever Angular is doing right now. They're trying to do this like huge rebrand, and then there's like, oh wait, we already had one huge change in Angular. Are we going to get a third new framework? And then I commented like, watch this be Angular's no new APIs moment. Like they're going to announce like, oh no, this is the exact same framework. We're not doing anything new. We're just changing our name or changing colors or something.
We're
But yeah,
just,
the
it's an outfit change, right?
exactly, yeah, pretty much. So that was kind of my thoughts. Or that's kind of what they tried to emphasize. So luckily, there won't be as much work that we have to do in terms of like building new integrations or fixing bugs. It'll actually be the lot more annoying version of how does this work, which will be that we'll kind of test it and we think it works, and then like over the next 3 months we'll have support tickets of I enabled partial pre-rendering and this thing broke, and that's how we discover actually most of the bugs.
Word, word. No, I'd be
I'm hoping
curious.
that's not the case, but yeah.
No. I wanna pivot a little bit and what were there any talks that were kind of like standout talks for you? It doesn't need to be necessarily like the hottest, newest features, but just ones you really enjoyed.
So I didn't really get to watch the virtual
Oh, that's
talks
right.
that
Yeah,
much.
you had said you didn't really watch any of them, right? I'm the same when I go to
No,
conferences.
yeah. So I like at the event itself, I didn't watch. I watched most of the keynote. That was it. But after like getting back home, I did watch all of the in-person talks. I tried to
Oh, great.
watch some of the virtual talks though, but there are just like way too many of them, and I need like one whole weekend just for that track.
So, of what you have watched, what are some things that
Right.
stood
Yeah.
out?
So let me think. I think the keynote was yeah, people clown on the Vercel being like trying to copy Apple or trying to like build that kind of a brand and like be the
I
elite
always say
elitist parties.
if you're gonna rip off someone, rip off the best. It's like when bands they
That's
like rip
fair,
off
yeah.
Radiohead. It's like people say Coldplay and Muse were built entirely on ripping off Radiohead, and I'm like, good. If you're gonna rip off a band, rip off the best band in the world.
Yeah, that is true, yeah. So but I think it's there for a reason, because like again, the keynote the keynote that Guillermo gives from like start to finish, it's pretty much like it's very nice. I guess I don't have the words to kind of describe what I'm trying to say, but like it's one of the one it's one of the better keynotes that I've seen at conferences. Let's go with that.
I think they do a great job with this kind of stuff, and I think, it's a certain aesthetic that Apple has, which is honestly, if you go to keynotes at other tech companies, you're going to see the same aesthetic. So I think most people associate it with Apple because Apple probably did it first. and most people only really watch Apple keynotes, but I think the tech industry at large has kind of adopted this like style of presenting things at conferences. So I think as long as they do it well, that's the important thing. And from what I've seen, they have a great production team. Guillermo's a great speaker. I've been listening to him do
Exactly,
like podcasts for, the entire time I've been in tech. So I think it's cool. I think it's cool to see someone who like, Guillermo, he grew up in this whole open source world, and he was like very scrappy when he started. You can see talks at like 10 years old of him at like Node conferences, and he's like got like his crazy hair, and he's like on his computer, and it's like super super lo-fi. But now he's got this whole epic production behind him, and I think that's awesome. Like I love seeing that.
Oh yeah. Give me a second. Let me quickly tweet about this.
Oh yeah,
Let me use the share button.
and thank you everyone out here who is listening and watching. If anyone has questions for Dev or just about Next or want to give some thoughts, feel free to raise your hand. This is an open mic. Always love getting people up here to talk about what they're interested in. And then I'm just kind of looking at the Next 14 announcement post, which includes kind of all the announcements at NextConf. I see something here that is personally interesting to me. There's a new Next.js educational course called the Next.js Learn course. And it says here that it starts by teaching the app router. So it's like a learn Next through the hottest and the best. Also looks like we got Rishi up here as a speaker. What's up, Rishi? Do you have a question for Dev or thoughts on Next.js? I know you have been developing with Next for a while. You built a lot of stuff on Next and Edgio, I believe. So what's up? Hello, hello.
Hello,
Is
how's it going?
anybody out there?
Oh, that was you. Okay.
I'm not sure if, I mean, Rishi became a speaker. He might be still figuring out his mic setup
That's fair,
or
yeah.
something.
But about Next.js Learn, yeah, I think it's definitely them answering the call to the community, I guess. That when everyone is saying that it's getting too complex, things are getting too hard to learn. Here we go. Here's a free course. Here's our version of epicweb.dev, so that like we don't need Kent to teach Next.js. We can do it ourselves.
This is so frustrating to me. To me, this is just the tutorial. Every framework should have a tutorial. Redwood have the tutorial, and it's like this should be table stakes. So that's cool that they're like answering the community's call, but at the same time, it's like this should have already been here and should be constantly updated with the framework, and then you're never in this situation.
I mean that's fair, but like looking through it, I don't quite see a tutorial. I see a like th this I definitely think this goes a step beyond the tutorial
That's
because
because
there
people have
is
low expectations of tutorials. This is what is this should be everything they have should be the table stakes for a good Next.js tutorial, because the tutorial
that's
should
fair.
cover the whole framework.
Yeah, and it's just such a big framework. But like a whole section on like search engine optimization or like explaining bundling client and server rendering CDNs, like I guess that's just is the problem space of Next.js now, so they have to talk about it. And
Yeah, I'm
so
looking
it
at
becomes
the
table
main
stakes.
overline, and SEO is not listed as one of the top line features. That may be its own piece
Wait,
in
I
the.
think am I at a different page?
It's just
Oh, there we go.
nextjs.org/learn. I don't see anything about SEO here.
Oh, wait, I was at a different page.
Yeah, and let me share this for people. There's 16 lessons. Basically, starting from getting started, going through styling, optimizing fonts, images, creating your layouts, and then things like setting up the database, fetching data, streaming, rendering. Oh, look here, the partial pre-rendering section is marked as optional, which is probably smart. And then mutations, error handling. I like that. Improving accessibility, that's its own lesson right there. Good on them for that. and then authentication. Oh, metadata, that might be the SEO section. Yeah, so the very, very last one is adding metadata, which is for SEO and shareability. Yeah, to me, this should not be seen as like a crazy advanced tutorial. I think every framework should have a tutorial that covers every single thing here. Redwood has since day one, so we've had that since 2020.
Yeah, I think I was looking at something completely different. Give me a second. Let me try to find how I even got there.
Yeah, and just to reiterate for those watching, you go to nextjs.org/learn. It's a real nice URL. Oh, it looks like Rishi dropped back down to listener. Not sure if that's a weird X thing going on or what. Thanks everyone out there for listening. Oh, we got a message from Rishi. He said partial pre-rendering is the one thing that is so close to a new API release. Yeah, that's probably why they were like, it's optional. If you don't want to use it, you don't have to. That way we can't, you can't say we broke anything.
Comments. There we go.
Okay, and here is the, I just
I think this
shared it.
is what I was looking at. It's the URL is learned pages router, but this I don't know if it actually talks about pages or app router.
Let me take a look.
Because this has a lot more details. And this is like from the SEO stuff, it still looks like it's
Ah, okay. So
supposed to
this
be part
is
of the
these
learn.
are the original docs, I think.
Oh, these are original docs. Okay, so I've never seen these docs.
Yeah, so this is what they, I'm assuming looking at this, they basically took this and then iterated on it to create what is now nextjs.org/learn. And also you notice
Right.
there's like different stylings between the two. So this is kind of the older version. And they have a whole section on SEO here, it looks like. Whereas in the new one is broken down into 16 lessons, and the 16th lesson is SEO. So it's a little bit de-emphasized. Compared to this, it looks like they spend a whole lot less time on Core Web Vitals, which makes a lot of sense to me because the framework as it's currently set up is a lot more set up for Core Web Vitals by default. You don't have to do as much hackery to get your Core Web Vitals to not suck so much. So
Right.
that makes a lot of sense to kind of de-emphasize that a bit. But I feel like the span of topics they cover and how they cover it makes a lot of sense. I think it has the right emphases on like starting with setting up your pages and your styling and your basic optimizations, and then adding on your backend, your data, that whole flow, and then finally your thing, your authentication, and then like accessibility and final metadata.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I took a like detailed look at exactly what the new course is, but like from the standpoint of like from the perspective of what are they trying to do with this, or maybe like this will be updated in the future to kind of actually reflect what they initially planned is kind of that, I guess. This is getting too hard to learn. Let's try to centralize as much as we can. Basically, React.dev, but like more beginner focused and Next.js.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
This is what my expectation is. Let's see if it happens because they right now have this. They have this big momentum of that. This is how you build stuff on like on the web.
Yeah,
This
it's
is the
the framework,
framework.
yeah.
Yeah. And so like having their own like centralized learning resource would be really helpful here. Because
Yeah.
then like people are not being pointed to like 6 months old videos that are actually like already obsolete, right?
Exactly. And that's why I think it is long overdue, but I'll give them
Mm-hmm.
props for finally creating it. Rishi, are you here with
Yeah.
us? Looks like no. Wait.
Yeah.
Oh no, he dropped back down to listener. Okay. I'm not sure if this
Yeah.
is a me Twitter bug or a him Twitter bug. We will figure it out. Oh wait, here we go. I would say, Rishi, if you
Yeah.
can hear me, oh wait, sometimes what helps is deleting.
Oh, there we
Oh, we
go.
got it.
Yeah, awesome. So regarding partial rendering, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, no, hit me up with your thoughts.
I'm sort of linking it directly to page partials in Astro, and I don't know why, but that seemed like Astro server components, if I would call it, but they're independent pages that you can render, and they don't need to be in HTML format as I saw, and they underneath use HTMX, so maybe you can do all of like those fetch operations and change the state. So that's what I closely related it with initially when it came up, but I think I need to learn this quickly so that I can release my new tutorial based on this. Yeah.
I like that. This is the HTMX killer. I feel like everyone's talking about HTMX right now, all of a
Right.
sudden.
And that's why I think Astro community did build this page partials integration so quickly over HTMS. Yeah. But yeah, I need to learn both frameworks quickly, man.
I feel like it's going to be practically impossible to like build an HTMX killer, because that's like HTMX is the closest you'll get to doing JavaScripty stuff without writing
Could
JavaScript.
you expand
And
upon
like
that?
there's not a lot of
What
other.
makes HTMX so unique from any other JavaScript framework?
I think what makes HTMX so unique is that you can, like, if you're writing in a different programming language, you don't need to now have like now figure out how to integrate with JavaScript if you need a little bit of client interactivity.
That's the
Like, so
dream.
anyone,
So
like,
every JavaScript developer has
yeah.
ever wanted.
Pretty much, yeah.
They're like, could you just give me
But
something so I don't need to write JavaScript? That would be great. If you could you solve that whole
yeah.
JavaScript problem for me?
Exactly, yeah. But like obviously it has its limits, and like if you are going to build something that is going to cross that limits, you have to drop down to JavaScript. But like HTMX basically extends your capabilities in your own programming language. That's kind of how I look at it.
Interesting. Is that your take on it as well, Rishi?
Yeah, I've been not so deep into HTMX, but it does look like it can take care of my JavaScript without me writing JavaScript. So, yeah.
Yeah, basically it's literally the only thing, or the best thing that HTMX does kind of is allow you to like how do I say it? Like it will allow you to do more without writing JavaScript and like still being in your programming language. So if you're already writing JavaScript though on the server, then it doesn't quite make sense to me to use HTMX, because then you're going to send a client runtime anyways, just put solid.
Very cool. Rishi, did you have other thoughts, or did you watch the conference at all? I should ask first off.
Oh, and quickly before that, I guess to your
Yeah,
question,
go ahead.
I don't know much about, I don't know anything about Astro partial pages, so I don't have an answer. I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, that's fine. I
I don't know
mean,
if you
I'm
do,
not super
Anthony.
expert in Photoshop, so yeah, I'm just learning, and I didn't have the time to watch the conference, Anthony, right now. But yeah, I'm reading through their docs, and like this really specifically is sort of hard to digest in terms of the technicalities involved in this one. So yeah, but the good thing that I found here is server actions, and I saw people doing cool things with server actions. They were able to return buttons through server actions after clicking on client side buttons and stuff like that. So yeah, I've been doing that a lot,
Yeah, let's
and I've wrote
go ahead.
tutorial based on it as well.
Yeah,
So
go ahead. You
yeah,
can
I'm super excited.
go ahead and share that tutorial in the chat. I'll go ahead and pin it. But
Sure, I'll do that. Yeah.
let's pivot to server actions kind of as a topic. To me, this seems like the big headline feature building up to the conference. I saw a lot of people talking about server actions, and to me, this is like, in GraphQL world, you have queries and mutations. So you'll throw a query to get data, you'll throw a mutation to create, update, or delete. data. So is the server actions the mutations? Is this what gets us to this GraphQL panacea without GraphQL that we've always wanted?
No.
Why no? Because it doesn't do that, or because it doesn't do it well enough?
So remember I when I was talking about HTMX, I said that, like, I think this is kind of like a nice way to that I found to look at tools, that how much do they extend your capabilities without you having to jump into a more advanced tool like GraphQL.
And GraphQL simple, not advanced, but go ahead.
Fair, yeah. I mean, so the way I think about GraphQL is that it is an advanced tool that we are trying to simplify for people, that frameworks like Redwood are doing a great job of wrapping it with a lot of simplicity, so that like you don't have to get, like, there isn't a huge learning curve, and you have access to this very advanced tool that can do a lot of crazy stuff if you wanted to, right? Actions, on the other hand, they kind of simplify, they simplify a lot of stuff, and they enable new capabilities, but they, like, in terms of like how they compare to GraphQL, they're never going to get into how granularly you can change something in GraphQL, or you have this unified schema.
So you
and,
can't
like literally
so you,
anything.
So you can't like mutate any field.
No, you don't mutate a field. What you do with actions is that you invalidate a cache, and that cache can either be an entire page, or it can be a fetch data cache. So if on the server you made a fetch
request to your backend, this has nothing to do with mutating data in a database.
So actions will be used for mutating data in a database, but like they're being used for that. But like GraphQL also kind of had, or a lot of GraphQL tools also have this cache layer, where you don't have to refresh a page. If you mutate the data, the GraphQL server already knows that these queries are depending on this data, and these queries need to update or invalidate it, right? That's kind of the one of the abilities that GraphQL gives you. It's because like it understands what queries depending on what data, it can like automatically invalidate all the queries that need to be invalidated. With server actions, you have to kind of do that yourself, and the finest level that you'll get to is either a fetch data call or a whole page or a whole route, and then the whole the entire route will get rendered on the server. It'll fetch all the data that it needs, and it'll render the UI on the client.
Okay, that makes sense. You're talking about they're not just giving you the ability to mess with your database. They're giving you this higher level caching ability because people are, as I did in the very beginning, comparing this to GraphQL. So they want to make sure they have those higher level caching features as well.
Yeah.
Cool. No, that pretty much. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, yeah. Other. Yeah.
And then the advanced stuff is that, so on top of that, because they try to build on top of web standards, or they are built on top of web standards, you can also use actions to like have progressively enhanced forms. So like when the HTML is being rendered, when you inject an action into a form, it'll basically turn into a URL that the browser can itself like send a post request to. But then as soon as it's hydrated, it turns into a regular prevent default, and then do it on the client side, like do it through JavaScript. So that's the other capability that it provides. And then obviously, because it's built into React, there's basically no, it can also like kind of act as the server dollar sign of solid, of quick and solid, where this is what I posted in a tweet, if I can find it, which is basically that I had a server component where I defined a server action. I passed it as a prop to a client component, and then the client component just receives a function as a prop which it can call. And behind the scenes, it's going to make an API request. And because it's just an asynchronous function on the client, you can put it in a use mutation if you want, or you can just use the built-in use optimistic hook that React now provides. and you can get like loading states, you can get optimistic UI, you can get like validation or like UI feedback and all of that kind of stuff. So it's kind of this like, I don't want to say silver bullet because that has kind of a negative connotation, but in some senses, it's kind of a silver bullet solution to do both like progressively enhanced mutations or fully interactive mutations and like invalidation on the server, along with obviously mutations.
Yeah. Well, Sam, I always quote my buddy Sneal Pie, who says the problem with silver bullets is they only work on werewolf shaped problems. So you can have a silver bullet, but you're going to have a whole lot of problems it's not going to work on.
Yes. And this is like one of those solutions which, like, the longer I watch Ryan Carniato, the more I understand his philosophy behind like composition, the more like I'm also starting to look at the world this way. Like I know that if this was like in charge of someone like Ryan Carniato, it would never be designed this way. But I guess also because he has his own designs for how this stuff should look like. But that's kind of the idea that, yes, it's a really nice tool, but it's also one thing doing a lot of other things behind the scenes. And at some point, it's going to get a little, there will be an abstraction leak at some point somewhere. Maybe it's already here and we're a little blind to it because not enough people are using it. And then at some point it'll show up. It's like use effect.
Yeah, definitely. And you can assume that this is not what Ryan Carniato would have built, because if that was the case, Solid Start and Next.js would be an identical framework. So
exactly. Yeah. You know.
Awesome. We have about 15 minutes left here. I'm going to have to hop at the hour. I want to open it up. If anyone wants to join and ask questions, you are welcome to. Otherwise, I want to open it up to both Dev and Rishi. Is there anything that you want to talk about in terms of the conference or Next or anything that's on your mind that has nothing to do with either?
I mean, there is the fourth announcement about TurboPack, which there wasn't really much there, but that's
cool. Let's hit TurboPack and then we'll go to Rishi. I think he had a thing, but let's start with TurboPack. I know that was the high level thing mentioned in the blog post, and it was basically it's faster, which everyone likes to hear.
So I'm going to summarize like the key announcement about TurboPack. So Guillermo got up and said, "So last year we talked about the switching everything to Rust to make everything faster. This year, we are announcing that we are still doing that."
Okay, so we said it was going to be fast, then it wasn't, but now we're saying again it's going to be fast.
No, it's still fast. Like, if you switch to...
Why does it need to be faster? It was fast then already.
It's not stable enough. Again, once you switch stuff to Rust, it's fast.
But then the headline feature should be it's stable now, not it's even faster.
No, it's not even fast. The headline announcement is that it is faster.
Let me read you the headline announcement. 53% faster local server startup. 94% faster code updates with fast refresh. I will say it does say before that it says 5,000 tests passing. That doesn't mean anything. Right. What if it's 5,000 out of 50,000?
Right.
I think they also have RV Turbo yet, where like they show how many tests are failing.
Yeah, SWC. SWC has been broken from the start. Still broken today.
Yeah, it's still in progress, I feel, and that 5,000 or 50,000 is a correct argument, but they're covering tests, and it's just sort of an announcement that you can probably expect in. And it's just
I think there's a number,
but you can expect that to be.
Go ahead, Rishi. Soon.
Yeah. Can you hear me fine?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Awesome. So yeah, I think the idea of saying that TurboPack is going to be stable, but it's that's a work in progress that they've shared, I believe.
I mean, hopefully it's going to be stable. Like, that's not an announcement. Everyone expects their tool to be stable one day.
Right, yeah. That's for sure.
And the other thing is that there are probably some announcements in that like release post that are just about Next 14 as it is right now without TurboPack. Like, there's still some performance improvements. So, like, there's going to be performance improvements on the current build while the work on TurboPack is going in the background. So those are, I guess, some of those benchmarks. I'm not fully sure. I don't remember exactly. But some of them are probably just that we have improved the performance on the current thing. And then the 5,000 tests passed, though, that's the how close we are to TurboPack. And they even build a rvturboyet.com where you can go and see like which how many tests are failing and like basically how much work there is still done to be done to for the TurboPack integration.
Awesome. Awesome. Cool. Rishi, did you have thoughts on the conference?
Right. Yeah, I had thoughts on server action. So like it does look like that you say use server and you can put your server side code in it, but I tried using SDKs inside of that and that sort of fails because of pre-shaking, I believe. And that's happening for use client components, and that's where it stuck for me. So the tutorial that I've shared has recent Labs API for sending emails, but I had to use like fetch call to make send that email instead of using recent SDK. And so that didn't work in server actions. So I believe there are some still gotchas to server actions being, you know, internally creating those API routes is being saved and stuff. So yeah.
Server function, are you defining that in a client component file or in a server component file?
No, that was solely a, like by default, it's use server, I believe, like a client server side component. So it was that I didn't specify the use client handler. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm just sending a form with the action of create and submit. So yeah, I've shared the thread on this particular space. So it should be there. But yeah, I had to make use of SDKs to do that. And probably there was a tweet I saw about SQL specifically, where it can lead to SQL injection. Is that correct? That's something I've been wondering because
that's completely like it was just a demo that Sam created that
if you set up your database to be totally open and you can throw any SQL you want into it, then of course you can SQL inject it. Hopefully no one builds their website like that.
All right, I see.
Yeah. And default library that he was using does not do that. Like this tag template literal, it will be sanitized before it's passed to the database.
All right, I'm no SQL expert and I just use Upstash. So yeah, no SQL
for basically me. That was, I'm not realizing, now realizing that I used a little too many fancy words there. It's basically, when that's before that SQL string, there was a SQL keyword or like a function being called, and basically you're passing that string into that function. It's kind of like using an ORM where it's going to make sure that there's nothing wrong.
So you're not. You're saying injected into. You're not sending a raw SQL command. You're sending kind of an interpolated one.
At least one that's sanitized, where like the variables have been taken out and being sent separately.
Interesting.
Or like a lot of database engines, like you just put $1, $2 in your SQL query, in your SQL statement, and then you send the parameters separately. And I don't mean like in a separate request, but like in a separate argument, you have the collection of like these are the values that are supposed to go into the SQL query, and the database itself will make sure that it's handled correctly. So you don't even have to do too much work on your own, like ORM side these days to handle that.
Right, right. Yeah, well, this is JavaScript Jam, not Database Jam. So I am not the biggest database expert here, but I'm gonna go back to what Rishi was saying about the third-party libraries. I think this is what's always gonna be the gotchas with frameworks and new features, and they can say this works in our framework. They can even say this is production ready, and that will be correct in the sense that it will work. But the thing that makes software complex, especially type of software web developers, right, is all of the dependencies, all the extra things we bring in. So this is, but it's also, this is tough for the team, you know, the next team, because they can't, it's impossible literally impossible for them to say, we work with 100% of dependencies. You will never get there. So that can't be the goal. The goal has to be, we work with enough dependencies that we can say this works with all of your extra crap. So, you know, email integration, that seems like pretty important to me, but at the same time, they can't go out and test every single email integration. So I guess like Rishi, when you hit a problem like that, what do? Do you complain on Twitter? Do you open an issue or do you just go on with your life?
No, I created a tutorial on how not to use the recent SDK and rather use the Fetch API to make that call. And that does push me for a better development because now I can deploy on Edge and rely on Edge functions to take.
I love that answer. So you don't complain, you don't open an issue, you solve the problem yourself right. With the lower level API.
I think my experience as solutions engineer has taught me that a lot.
that's dope. That's very, very cool. All right, cool. So this has been an awesome episode. Thank you, Dev and Rishi, for joining. You want to both give your socials and how people can get in touch with you. And for everyone out in the audience, please hit that face and follow.
Appreciate that, Anthony.
Yeah, you can go first, Rishi, and then Dev. So just like how people can get in touch with you or what stuff they should check out from you.
All right. So yeah, hey, I'm Rishi, and you can get touch on me on Twitter, Rishi_Raj_Jain_, would be my handle. And I mostly tweet about web development, specifically again Next.js is, and the framework Astro. Though I'm biased to Astro, so yeah, just go ahead and hit me up for any queries and any kind of work that you like for me to do for you, and spin up tutorials because that's how I've been enjoying lately doing.
I love it. I love tutorials. Everyone should build tutorials. All web developers should build tutorials. Cool. Dev.
Yeah. I tweet about web dev as well. I also sometimes make YouTube videos. I haven't made one in a while, but hoping to get back on the grind there. Obviously, Twitter profile there. There's a link to my YouTube channel there. And if you're in this space, if you like, you probably like Next.js. And if you like Next.js, you're gonna like Clerk a lot because it's basically the auth solution that takes as much advantage of Next.js as possible, and like really tightly integrates with all the niceties that Next.js has to offer.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about being the framework is that every tool out there. The first example they build is with the framework, which is Next. So I see this happen a lot almost, and this goes back to like, does your third party thing work with this? If that third party specifically said, we need to work with frameworks, what's the first framework we need to work with? Probably going to be Next. So that's an advantage that I feel like is rarely brought up, but is like, very, very real. Having worked at many places that build many integrations, you are always, always going to start with Next.
Yep. Pretty much it. Thank you. Thanks for having me. This was great.
Yeah. Thank you for joining. And thank you everyone out there for listening. We will catch you on the next one.